You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
And welcome back. Another program here in the middle of the week as we get ready to head toward a pretty important weekend in college football. We will be in Athens on Friday getting you ready for the game of the day. And that's, of course, involving the Kentucky Wildcats. And Mark Stoops has created a top SEC program where there was none before. Well, at least not in a very long time. He's done a phenomenal job. We, of course, talked to the coach the other day, and the Kentucky Wildcats are undefeated. SEC meetings with both teams 6-0 or better since division format in 92. Do you notice something? 19, 16, 12, 11, 10, 9, 98. Until 2000, they've really primarily consisted of West teams. Of course, 09 and 98, you had East versus West, but for the most part, it's been all about the SEC West. Not this time around. How about this for dog fans? Last time the number one team showed up, long. Hasn't happened. First game at home as a number one ranked team. Now, that's interesting. I think that just shows you how big this game is. With Alabama's loss, there would have already been plenty of attention on Athens Saturday afternoon, but there's even more now, the fact that Kentucky is coming in undefeated as well. How about the Alabama defense? It has a daunting task against Mississippi State's improved offense. You buying? You might want to. Mike Leach has got some big-time wins. Now, the majority occurred at Texas Tech. He wants to beat our number one team at Texas Tech. Can he do it this time around? I'm not betting on it, but I can be convinced. We still have 4 hours to go. So, State fans, let us hear from you. And Dan Mullen, mistake-prone Gators have a plan to handle LSU's raucous Tiger Stadium. Now, will it be raucous at 11 a.m. in the morning? Will it be raucous with all the problems that program is encountering? Another loss for the Tigers. Eli Rick, considered one of the top defensive players in the country, so they've lost him. They've lost Stingley, Boutte. Who else will be lost from the LSU program? But did you know this is just the third time the Tigers have kicked off before noon at home in the past 10 years? They beat Utah State in 19, Arkansas in 20. I remember them beating Florida about 6 years ago. I remember being at the game. They've won 9 straight pre-noon games. And they talk about how I think Florida beat them the last time I was there. Okay, we got A&M and Missouri, first meeting since 14. They used to play each other a lot. Auburn at number 17, Arkansas. Arkansas has lost the last 5 in the series. Ole Miss at Tennessee. That doesn't happen very often. First time since 2010. Derek Dooley was the coach at the University of Tennessee back then. 13 undefeated college teams. What lies ahead? That's a question that we will be asking throughout the program today. David Ubbin joins us. He's done a couple of articles that are of great interest, including one about the Tennessee coaching search about 4 years ago that ended up with Jeremy Pruitt. We head to Baton Rouge in the second hour to get a tail of the tape on that program. Edgar Thompson from the Orlando Sentinel and Drea and Alyssa joining us in the third hour. Your calls right now at 855-242-7285. Let's check in with Andre first. Good afternoon, Andre.
Thanks for taking my call, Coach. What's going on with Elias Ricks down at in Baton Rouge, Coach? I haven't heard of that one yet.
Yeah, he's banged up, or so he says.
Yeah. Well, he was thinking about going in the transfer portal. But what's last year he was thinking about it. Coach, what's the latest word on Coach O? When they're going to pull the trigger?
So you're no longer wondering if. You're just asking when, right?
Oh, yeah. Ain't no doubt. Ain't no doubt, Coach. I know it, and you know it. It's just a matter of when. It's not if.
Yeah, I think the tone and tenor of this game will be important, and then they head to Ole Miss the following week. And think about this for a second, Andre. After the Ole Miss game, there is a bye week. Think about that for a second.
Coach, it's going to go down before that, Coach. I know it, and you know it. You can feel it in the wind. Who's going to be the next coach, Coach? Who do you suggest?
Now, that I don't know. Who would you like to see?
I would like for them to go with somebody young, you know, and that can recruit the offensive line and the defensive line and the linebackers, because that's where we're hurting yet. Hey, I wish they could have got the defense coordinator from Notre Dame, Freeman. I think he would be good. But go with somebody young, Coach. No doubt about that. But thanks for taking my call.
Hey, Andre, great to hear from you. Thank you so much. Faye is up next in Virginia. Hello, Faye.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing today?
Faye, we are doing great.
I enjoyed your opening while I was sitting here listening.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Georgia and Kentucky be interesting, but I think since Kentucky's got a few players out, I don't know if that's going to go very well for them. And Tennessee and Ole Miss, right?
Right.
That's going to be a good game, I think, because Tennessee is
really – Who do you pull for, Faye?
I'm an Alabama fan, baby. Yeah. You know, they had a misstep of 2 or 3 on Saturday, but they've given us enough joy for the last few years to look at and to watch. We can't be that upset with them. You know, it happens to everybody every now and then.
It does happen that way, Faye.
Oh,
even the best have a bad day.
Yeah, it was their day, wasn't it? But you know what? That's okay. I think they'll rise above it. And I just want to know, you know, I'm 83 years young.
Oh, man.
I've been an Alabama fan all my life, born and raised in Alabama. And been through the – I know one day y'all talked about listening to games on the radio.
Oh, sure.
I can attest to that.
Well, I bet you can.
Yes, sir. And my husband worked at a CBS studio in Huntsville, Alabama at one time.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. And Bear Bryant would come there every now and then. And that was quite amazing. He really enjoyed that.
Well, I bet
that
he did.
Did
you ever meet the bear?
No, I never met him, but I've got a big picture of him when he was on the team when they went out west. Was it USC they played or UCLA?
USC.
Yeah, and a friend that had gone to one of the ball games in Birmingham, which we went often, and I got his signature on it.
Wow.
That means a lot. Yeah, that means
sure
a lot.
Does.
Yeah, and, man, I could talk to you all day, but I know you got to – I've been trying to get in for months and months and months. So, you know, and I just want you to know that you make my day every day. Like I told you, I'm 83. Don't get out too much because of all this mess that's going on with the COVID. But you make my day every day, Paul.
Well, Faye, you continue to be young and be healthy, and let's talk again soon. Thank you so much. Brian is up next. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Paul. I really appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you.
Just had a point. I haven't heard a whole lot of people talking about it, but just a big difference I've noticed between Georgia and Alabama, and wanted to see what you thought about it. I mean, don't get me wrong. Georgia's deserves to be number one. They're the best team. I would not be surprised at all if they went out and win, you know, the SEC and the national championship. But I just noticed that the teams Georgia's played, they have yet to play anybody that's brought their A game. It seems like every time they go up, right at the start of the game, the team they're playing just crumbles. Arkansas just looked like a deer in the headlights. Auburn, you know, was dropping passes left and right. Even Clemson's offense, we know about that now. And that's a big difference from Alabama, because Alabama's gone on the road, and they've had two teams, Florida and A&M, that have absolutely played as good as they could possibly play when they played them.
Yeah, no,
and
I agree with that, but tell me this. I mean, what had A&M done prior to that game?
Well, it doesn't matter.
Well, it may not matter, but we're talking about a team that is underperformed, and the fact that they had a good game against Alabama, I'm not really sure what that means.
Well, here's what I think it means. Let me explain.
It means that maybe they like going up against the Alabama defense.
Maybe so. But what I'm thinking is that I'm just saying, I think that if Alabama makes it to the championship game and if Georgia makes it to the championship game, and if teams keep crumbling right off the bat against Georgia and they don't have anybody actually play
well.
But,
Brian, think about this for a second. There's a reason why those teams crumble, because Georgia has the best defense in the country.
That's true. That's a fair point. I mean, you know, how much of that is Georgia and how much of that is those teams just not being ready? You know,
well,
we don't know.
I mean, the Clemson game was at a neutral site. The Auburn game was on the road for Georgia. So, I think one thing we know, Alabama cannot play on the road. I mean, we've seen that now in two episodes. They have had a similar type of game where they were clueless at times and made mistakes and didn't execute. They'll be on the road again this week. But they may have had the wake-up call. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. We're heading to a break. More of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Back here, the guests will start landing in a couple of moments. Let's get back to the calls, and Jim is up next.
Well, Paul, you always said the next day is reset day, right? Reset.
Reset Wednesday.
Okay. Well, I'm glad it is, because I tell you what, that's an opening, Paul. You ought to hire Miss Faye from Virginia. My daddy was from Virginia. That was the best call I've heard, maybe in a. That by far the best call, better than any call yesterday. That's for sure. Miss Faye, you're great. I love that. Man, she sounded like she's about 40. When she said she's 83, I said,
she's
good night.
83 years old, Jim. Think about that.
I'm thinking about it. She's 83 years young, I'll tell you right now. I'm telling you, that woman, I'm serious. You should have her on at least two or three times if you can get her. And start the show like I used to start the show. I never started the show that good, but, you know, I used to be a little somewhat of a catalyst. Man, that was great. I mean, really upbeat. Nothing like that moron. Well, I'm not going to name names, but, you know, you had usually starting the show, and I would say Louisville, and that's all that needs to be said, show killer. But this lady is great. I love Faye. Miss Faye, you're great. Really, call again, please. I mean, that picked me up. That really picked me up.
Well, and she was so gentle and spoke so eloquently. Yeah, no, I agree with you, Jim. She was a winner.
And she's also so outspoken. I mean, her voice was clear and crisp and you know, not, you know, just, it was, she's show business. She's showbiz. She really is.
Well, Jim, I'm glad you approved.
No, I really do. I love it. I hope you get her back. I hope she comes back.
Well,
I wanted to talk to her, but anyway, if she calls back, can I talk to her?
Yeah, no, I think the two of you would be great. You would be, what a combination.
Yeah, I know. You think I'm 83 or something. Well, anyway, I'm not 83,
no,
Paul.
I don't think you're 83.
Well, I'm not even 73. I'm not even 63. No. But that's beside the point. Age has got nothing to do with what you like. That lady is great. All right, great start of the show. That's all
Thank
I can
you,
tell
Jim.
You.
Yeah, 80. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're 83 or not. She's still great, or 63, or whatever three. Hugh is up next, and you are on the air. Hello, Hugh.
Good afternoon, Paul. For the last 2 days, we've had a barrage of Alabama folks licking their wounds, and this may put a lot of the Alabama football fanatics' panties in a wad, but I want to remind them that the best two teams in the Southeastern Conference, based on their record, are going to play at 3:30 in Georgia, and one of them made Alabama. And the truth of the matter is, that may turn out to be one of the better football games we'll see all season. I think one thing we have learned is home field advantage is a big deal. It's worth at least 7 points and maybe a few more, but it ain't worth 23 points. I think I'm going to have to put a couple of Charlies on Kentucky if the bookies are throwing out 23 points with that. Couple of things to keep in mind that Kirby Smart has been telling everybody. They're going to get, with their vaunted defense, which is clearly one of the best in the country, an NFL offensive line and running game like they've not seen this year. That's where the game will be decided. And it's going to be very interesting to see if they can shut down Kentucky's running game with their front seven. Because if they can't, they're going to get burned on top. Kentucky has an NFL line. They've got three guys, the tackles, one guard, and a center that'll all be playing in the NFL next year. They're 23 and 24 years old, and they're going up against a senior and junior strong, dominant defense. That's what Southeastern Conference football is all about. I think Georgia will probably win it. I think they'll win it by one touchdown. There ain't no way in hell they're three touchdowns better than Kentucky. That's all I got to say, Paul.
Great to hear from you. Zachary is in North Carolina. Hello, Zachary.
Hello, Paul. Thanks for having me on the show. Wanted to ask you about the Tennessee-Ole Miss game. Who do you think will win that game? You know, Tyon Evans is back and stuff, and if Hendon Hooker is playing really well. I just wanted to ask your opinion on that
game. You know,
Zachary,
I'm glad you asked me because I am really struggling with this game. I am wanting to pick Tennessee. Can you give me a reason to do that?
Well, Hendon Hooker is one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC right now. He's really hot right now. I mean, that could be one of the reasons why they could bring home the upset.
Yeah, I frankly, I'm not sure it would be considered a massive upset because Tennessee is playing so well right now for the last couple of games, and you know, Ole Miss is too. But I do think I think this will be a decided advantage for Tennessee from a home field standpoint. I think the crowd is going to be a factor, and it just will be interesting to see how Tennessee feeds off of that.
Yeah, I agree with you. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you very much. 10-year-old Zachary in North Carolina. Daryl is up next. Not that Daryl, but this Daryl.
Hey, Paul, what's going on, sir?
Hey there.
Been a while. Haven't talked to you in a long time. It's been a while since I've seen you. I saw you a couple of years ago, I guess now it's been, at the LSU State game. I was there.
Oh, yeah.
You were talking to a gentleman and his son were right in front of me on Friday. I don't know if you noticed me or not, but I stuck out like a sore thumb. I was wearing my red and black, so I don't know how you could miss me.
I do. Yeah, I remember being over there. Well, I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to talk longer, but have you been?
I am doing well. Thank you for asking. I just wanted to give you make a conversation about something. I was going to ask you, see if you could maybe, since you have pull with Saban, if you could ask him to take it easy on State this weekend, because that's where my dad went to school. That's why I was at that LSU State game.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I don't think there's anything Coach would rather hear from somebody right now than from somebody like me saying, Coach, I know you just lost the game, but if you could just win by 7 or 8 points, go easy on the bullies over there because hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Great to hear from you. David Ubben covers the Vols and other things. He will join us next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Well, we welcome you back. His moment's not very good. Hope yours is, though. David Ubben joining us from The Athletic. He's the national college football writer. He has covered Tennessee, and for that, he deserves a lot of credit. David, thank you very much. Before we get to some of the other your stories and reasons, I just want to ask you about this Tennessee team that I know you're keeping up with. Did anyone expect them to be playing this well?
I think the biggest surprise is on defense. I knew they'd be able to score some points. You know, I've seen this system in a variety of spots, and it's really difficult to cover. And Tennessee had some athletes. They're obviously pretty thin. They had some really good options at quarterback. So I really thought they'd be able to score some points. But people are sleeping on the way this defense is playing. They're better in pretty much every metric than they were a year ago. I think they're leading the SEC in tackles for loss. You know, just outside the top 30 in defensive yards per play. And you know, that's why they're in the position that they're in right now, heading into a game against Ole Miss after two, you know, pretty impressive beatdowns. So, you know, scoring, you know, 28 points in the first quarter in consecutive weeks is impressive, but home opponents, I think, what, 3 and 6 points is more impressive to me and more surprising.
Let me get to some two stories that you've written, one about Tennessee, which we'll get to in a second, but another one about who is a legitimate contender right now. There are, I mean, I think the average football fan might be surprised how many undefeateds there are, and that includes Wake Forest. But how many of these undefeateds, David, are really contenders? I know you did a deep dive into that.
Yes, there's 13 undefeated teams. I mean, we're 6 weeks into the season, and 10% of the college football teams are still undefeated. I mean, so I think probably a handful of those have to be taken seriously. I think Iowa's the most interesting team in that, you know, you ask the average college football fan, they're probably not very impressed with Iowa. But Iowa is going to be heavily favored in every game from here on out up until probably the Big Ten championship. So that's one that you might not like them, but they're going to be around. They're going to be in the conversation, you know, barring an upset. Obviously, I think Georgia's the best team in the country. But you look around, you know, there's a bunch of teams that probably are not going to be in the mix there, but you can't deny them until they lose. I think Oklahoma's at the front of that line, very unimpressive to this point in the season. But maybe Caleb Williams fixes some things. We'll see. But then you have the sort of the Wake Forest aspect of it, the Oklahoma States. You know, obviously Michigan, Michigan State are two really interesting teams. The Big Ten East will sort itself out eventually. But it's a really interesting landscape right now, and then a lot of teams that, you know, can win their way into the playoff.
Talking to David Ubben from The Athletic, I want to flip to another story. You did with one of your colleagues earlier, and I was riveted by the story because we lived it in real time on this program. And you went deep into the weeds on what happened 4 years ago when Jeremy Pruitt ended up as a coach, you and Nicole Auerbach. Take it from the top, David, because this is one of the most bizarre coaching searches, I think, in the history of all coaching searches.
Yeah, I mean, how much time you got, Paul? We dug into it pretty deep at The Athletic this week. We've got a series running across our vertical. It's about secrets of the coaching carousel. And one of the things that we wanted to look into was that Tennessee search, which really set the bar for the wildest coaching search probably in modern college football history, maybe in all of college football history. I think the thing I was most struck by was sort of the shadow search going on simultaneously as John Curry is doing the job that he's paid to do. And then a lot of folks with a lot of money and a lot of influence doing a job that they sort of see as a hobby, I guess, reaching out, talking to people, you know, sort of unauthorized, if you want to call it that, conversations. I think it highlights some of the dysfunction that was going on at Tennessee at the time, and we got into a lot of that. You know, John Harbaugh, I don't think he was that interested in Tennessee, but he was approached, and just a very interesting situation. And of course, you know, obviously John Curry pushed out in the middle of that search. Philip Fulmer comes in there. Certainly a job that a lot of people felt like he was sort of waiting on and ended up getting. And so that Tennessee search, there's just so many aspects to it. You know, the search itself is interesting. And then you have, of course, the noise outside of that, the Shiano Sunday, the fan revolt that involved politicians and personalities and social media and all those things. We got into all that just talking to people about it. I mean, in 4 years, you know, some people's perspectives have changed, and it was fascinating to go into and report that story out, and then of course write it.
Let's start so I know the Shiano was a big part of it. Was he the first choice, or did somebody Sam, I'm trying to remember, there's too many names to remember, did somebody else say no? Yeah. Before they got to him,
I mean, it sort of depends on what no means. I mean, you know, It's the old adage of only one person was ever offered any college coaching job every single time. So, you know, certainly a lot of people were approached. I mean, you talk about, you know, Dave Doran at NC State. You talk about Mike Gundy. You talk about all these things. I mean, I don't think Shiano was necessarily the first choice. I mean, where does John Gruden, who's been in the news this week, factor into all that decision? You know, certainly fans have wanted him that time around. Not really a realistic candidate. But, no, I mean, Shiano not the first choice. That's for sure. But a choice, obviously.
But he was David, going to get the offer, and I want you to just freeze frame that Sunday in November, I believe, and take us through that one day, because this is the day that I think everyone remembers. Afterwards, there were a million rumors, but Greg Schiano was heading to Knoxville. Is that correct?
Oh, it was more than an offer. I mean, you have a signed memorandum of understanding. I mean, that deal was basically closed on Saturday night. You have paperwork signed. Then you have it leak out kind of Sunday early afternoon that Shiano's the guy. And fans did not want that for a variety of reasons. And sort of, you know, depending on who you ask, it's sort of a different reason for different people. We obviously got into a lot of that. That's another complicated conversation. But, yeah, it was more than just an offer. I mean, it was done, a signed deal, and then – Obviously, fans revolted and politicians got involved, and that decision was reversed. And it's something that we have not seen in a college coaching search, I mean, to my knowledge, ever. And so we wanted to go back and write about that. And you know, as we dug into the coaching carousel, as obviously this year, this is the time of year the coaching carousel starts to spin. You already have an opening at USC, LSU may be coming open very soon, some big jobs opening, and the coaching carousel is always interesting, and there's so many tales over the years of what happened, but Tennessee really does set the bar for something special.
So after that, after the mob ruled, and that's about the most charitable way to put it, I'm particularly curious about Philip Fulmer's role, because, you know, he – ended up as the athletic director after John Curry got unloaded by the chancellor. How did that go down?
Well, I mean, he was already in a sort of an advisory role, and he obviously cares a lot about Tennessee. He wanted to be involved in that, but, you know, that's not always a positive for a lot of people. You know, we had one candidate in our story that basically said he was not comfortable taking the job with Fulmer kind of hanging around. And I think early on in Jeremy Pruitt's tenure, you know, they got along pretty well. But later on, I mean, it was becoming somewhat of an annoyance for Pruitt to sort of have, you know, Philip Fulmer in meetings and doing all those things and being really involved in the day-to-day of the program that you don't see from athletic directors typically. But Philip Fulmer is a football coach, an offensive line coach, who has won a bunch of games at Tennessee and wanted to help. But sometimes that help, you know, it probably got in his way in terms of that relationship. But I think what Jeremy Pruitt experienced was what a lot of candidates were kind of worried about, that became something that was reality over the three seasons Jeremy Pruitt was at Tennessee.
And really, I mean, the end shot of your story with Nicole is that social media killed one coach. Mike Leach told us about a year ago that he was essentially offered the job by John Curry. But what I think maybe the most interesting part of this story is that while John Curry's out in L.A., I believe, meeting with Mike Leach, he's pretty much already done, but he didn't know it, did he?
Yeah, I mean, the aspect of having a flight that doesn't have Wi-Fi, you know, if there's Wi-Fi on that flight, this probably plays out very differently. If Florida lands, Dan Mullen, or Florida lands Chip Kelly or Scott Frost, then Tennessee probably gets Dan Mullen and fans are happy and it's a very, very different situation. There's just so many what-ifs that play out in all of this scenario that it's really fascinating. But, yeah, I mean, the Mike Leach thing was sort of dead in the water before it could kind of become reality. Certainly Beverly Davenport, the president at the time, or chancellor at the time, felt like this is in the middle of this search. She felt like her AD went AWOL, couldn't hear from him. A lot of it was the Wi-Fi on the flight. And that, you know, combined with the Schiano debacle, you know, they made a change and put Phil Fulmer in the driver's seat for that search. And, you know, to Phil Fulmer's credit, he narrowed the field pretty quickly and made his selection. But 3 years later, that selection did not work out very well.
David Ubben from The Athletic, a couple of fascinating pieces there. Thank you very much, David. We head to the break right now, and we'll get more of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. We'll talk to some more guests as well. Busy, busy Wednesday afternoon. Stick around.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
John is in Florida. Hello, John. John, you there? Billy is up next in Philly. Hey, Billy, go right ahead.
Hi, Paul. I was calling to two things. I wanted to ask you a question about Iowa and Penn State, but I wanted to also comment on the home field advantage.
Sure.
Which I think is just great. I mean, I think that Texas A&M and Ole Miss and Iowa, maybe even Kentucky, certainly Virginia Tech's hanging in with Notre Dame like they did. It happened because of the home field advantage. Living in the Northeast, where I get to watch Ivy League or Patriot League football, some games are good, some games are bad. The one thing that's for sure, no one's in the stands. If you get 2,000 undergraduates to an Ivy League football game, it's amazing. They just don't care. And the reason is because they have no pride of place, which I think the South does and I think the Midwest does. People here make money as lawyers, as consultants, and working on Wall Street. And money has no geographical loyalty to anything. You don't like us in New York, we go to London. You don't like us in China, we go to Singapore. We move. And I think that's very unhealthy. And I think one of the great appeals of SEC football is that these towns care so terribly much about their team and their state, it means something to them. Up here, nothing means anything to anybody except, you know, how you doing, not how we doing.
Billy, I think you're right. I mean, there are pockets up there, as you know. Penn State has been able to overcome that, but really almost no one else.
I agree. My next question was, what is your judgment? I mean, I probably got to watch more of the Iowa game than you did, because you were watching another game personally.
I saw the end of it.
But I'm curious which. Okay, what are your thoughts about? I called last week and said I think Penn State's going to be the toughest team to beat. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know that it's not true. I don't know who's playing quarterback, but I was interested in your judgment because I know it's better than mine.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I think Penn State would have won with a healthy quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Iowa to me looks very one-dimensional, and that dimension is obviously on the defensive side. I just don't think they would be able to hold up in a college football playoff, and I'm still not sure they'll be able to get out of the Big Ten. I believe very strongly that Ohio State is coming back and will ultimately win the Big Ten.
What can you tell me about the coach at Penn State?
Well, I think James Franklin is a great CEO type of coach, which is fine. I mean, everyone does it differently. I'm not convinced that he will ever get Penn State above where they are. I think they're at a nice place, but it's certainly not quite a national championship level. To me, they'll lose to Ohio State in a couple of weeks. And they'll lose either to Michigan or Michigan State. So, and then I think he'll leave. I think he's going to Southern Cal.
Wow. Well, this is a good call I made, huh? A lot of people are waiting for you to say something like that.
Well, Billy, thank you. It's always always a pleasure to speak to you. Derek, we go from Philly to Los Angeles. Hello, Derek. Derek, good afternoon.
Hi, Paul. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And thank you, Billy, for asking that question, because my question concerns USC. And it's interesting that Billy brought that up and you just said what you said. But now I'm kind of worried, because here's kind of a twofold question. I read recently that if Urban Meyer is available next year, Florida State, LSU, or USC will be his possibilities for recruitment, that those schools will go after him. I got in a debate with a couple of my friends because I said that Urban Meyer would be perfect for USC because the recruitment is terrible. We need to get that program up. It would take at least 2 to 4 years. And my friends are talking about Deion Sanders would be a better fit. So I'm wondering what your opinion on that would be. And also, just comment later on, I just am curious about Jim Harbaugh of Michigan. Me personally, I think that this is going to be his last year at Michigan. Win or lose, I think he's going to be in the NFL next year, and I think you'll see him against his brother either on Sunday night or Monday Night Football. What do you think?
Well, I think Jim Harbaugh would be better in the NFL, and now that he's resurrected his tarnished name a little bit, he perhaps could get an NFL job. Back to the Urban Meyer situation. I think there's only one big-name coach in the country right now who is in worse shape to ever get a job in college or pro football, and that is John Gruden. But I do not believe SC would hire Urban Meyer. I think Urban Meyer has tainted his legacy and his reputation even more than it was already tarnished. So I do not see that happening at all.
That's interesting. So you think that John Gruden can possibly coach in college?
I don't think John Gruden could get a job. I'm not going to finish that statement, because anything I said after that would diminish somebody doing an honest day's job, and John Gruden is a sleazeball, and he's not getting a job anywhere.
I agree with you, and I want to thank you. And also, that young, I'm going to call her a young lady, 83-year-old Faye, I really appreciate her. I'm a counselor in a lockup with 24 children. I wish she was on the West Coast, because she could come and inspire these kids. And I thank you for having her on, because she inspired me.
Well, that is fantastic, Derek. You call again. All the best to you. We have reached the end of the first hour. We have a lot to do the rest of the way. We will head to Baton Rouge here in a couple of minutes. That is a situation that just continues to get worse for the health of the LSU Tigers as they get ready to host one of the biggest games of the year against the Florida Gators. What about the future of Coach O? We'll talk about that as well. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. We are back right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.